Today, will inflation come roaring back? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I've noticed posts covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update. Well, in recent months, central banks have been able to say inflation was falling back towards their targets, but this had little to do with their rate hiking cycle and more to the adjustments in supply-side prices, especially energy. The so-called base effects, where big lifts in inflation months ago dropped out, helped the narrative, but the inflation battle is, in my view, far from over. This is because ahead, the base effects actually will reverse. And when we consider the recent spike in energy prices, higher wages flowing through to the services sector of the economy, overall, I think that inflationary pressures will re-accelerate in the months ahead. And in the US, I think, with oil and gasoline continuing the upward trend, CPI could potentially rise back above 5.1 to 5.5% by the end of the year. So inflation levels could well remain elevated for a more extended duration than is presently anticipated by financial markets. Next week, the US government will release the August CPI report, and the number will also likely show that prices continue to increase at a pace far more quickly than the 2% rate that the Federal Reserve considers healthy. This will help determine what the Federal Reserve's near-term outlook for interest rates will be as the US central bank continues the difficult task of trying to balance its ongoing battle to contain inflation with an attempt to cool the economy without tipping the economy into recession. The August core CPI index, which doesn't include food and energy prices, could well come in at around 0.2% higher, matching the same increase in July. And estimates for the year-on-year figure call for about a 4.5% gain compared to July's 4.7% reading. The financial markets see a 94% chance of the Fed leaving rates unchanged at its meeting later this month, compared with just a 6% chance of a 25 basis point increase. But traders now see a roughly 40% chance of the Fed raising its benchmark rate by a quarter percentage point to a range of 5.5 to 5.75% at its November meeting. At the same time, hopes of seeing rate cuts by early 2024 have, well, completely faded. My expectation, therefore, is the CPI print could well come in higher than expected. As one analyst said, we have a problem where ultimately the Fed may be pushed into a corner. And while they might take a pause because of the lag effect, I don't think they're done. Mixed comments from federal officials also fueled uncertainty. New York Fed President John Williams kept his options open this week, while Dallas Fed President Lori Logan said that while it could be appropriate to keep rates steady at the next meeting, there is work left to be done, so more tightening might be needed. With investors growing increasingly uncertain over the Fed's monetary policy plans, a lot will be on the line next week, as cracks begin to widen in the year-to-date rally on Wall Street amid rising bond yields, spiking oil prices, and a higher dollar. And by the way, service activity data came in stronger than expected, and the weekly jobless claims fell. Meanwhile, a surging stock market powered US household wealth to a record high of more than $154 trillion in the second quarter, aided by a rebound in property values, according to Federal Reserve data. US households' net worth rose 3.7% to $154.28 trillion in the period from April through to June, from $148.79 trillion at the end of the first quarter. This is based on the quarterly snapshot of the balance sheets of households, businesses, and federal and state and local governments. The data showed households have fully recouped the wealth losses created by the crashing bear market for stocks and weaker real estate values through much of last year as the Fed kicked off an aggressive campaign to rein in inflation through large, rapid-fire interest rate increases. In fact, the S&P 500 Total Return Index, including reinvested dividends, delivered an 8.7% return in the second quarter. That's the largest gain since the final 3 months of 2021. The equity market's rally added nearly $2.6 trillion to household net worth, accounting for nearly half of the overall wealth gain in the quarter. But real estate was the other large driver, with property values rising for the first time since the second quarter of 2022, contributing $2.5 trillion to the increase in net worth. And household wealth at the end of June exceeded the previous record high of $152.49 trillion set in the first quarter of 2022 by around $1.8 trillion, or 1.2%. That said, the size of households' cash war chests, comprising a variety of bank deposits and money market mutual funds, continue to dwindle, declining for a record fifth straight quarter to $17.7 trillion, a major contributor to the resilience of consumer spending. That stockpile at the end of June was down by $66 billion from the end of March and has fallen by more than $560 billion from its peak at nearly $18.3 trillion at the end of the first quarter of 2022. Household saving habits continue to shift away from banks, which have been slow to keep up with the Fed's rate hikes by offering higher interest rates on checking and saving accounts and, until recently, certificates of deposit. So bank deposits fell by more than $200 billion to below $14.2 trillion, while money market fund balances climbed by $137 billion to a record of more than $3.5 trillion. But debt levels for households, businesses, and governments kept rising in the second quarter, though the pace of increase varied widely by sector. Non-financial debt increased on an annualized rate of 6.3%, that's the fastest since the first quarter of 2021, to $71.2 trillion, with households and businesses each accounting for roughly $20 trillion. And government $31.3 trillion. The main driver of the increase was a 12.7% annualized increase in federal government debt. That's the largest since the record increase in the second quarter of 2020, which was fueled by the first round of pandemic relief spending. The US Treasury ramped up bond issuance late in the second quarter after the Biden administration and Congress struck a deal to suspend the federal debt ceiling, so to avoid a government default. Business debt growth, meanwhile, moderated substantially, climbing at just 1.9% on the annualized rate in the second quarter. That's the slowest growth since the first 3 months of 2020. As a result of all this, the S&P 500 closed slightly higher on Friday, but well below its session high, and all three of Wall Street's major indices posted weekly declines as investors worried about interest rates and waited anxiously for upcoming US inflation readings. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.22% to 34,576. The S&P 500 gained 0.14% to 4,457, and the Nasdaq Composite added 0.09% to 13,761. For the week, which was shortened by Monday's Labor Day holiday, the S&P 500 fell 1.3%, the Nasdaq lost 1.9%, and that meant snapping 2 weeks of gains, and the Dow fell 0.8%. Yields on benchmark US 10-year notes were lower, with Friday's rise in the US 2-year Treasury appearing to pressurize stocks. David Lekovitz, head of US equities at UBS Global Wealth Management, noted that investors have been increasingly concerned about rising rates since early August. The tone has changed in recent weeks because of the move up in rates. People are questioning whether this is a risk to economic growth. Are higher rates going to lead to some slowdown in conjunction with the dwindling of excess consumer savings? He questioned, who also cited concerns about high valuations in equities. And Bank of America rate strategists abandoned their recommendation to be tactically long the 10-year Treasury note, seeing risk that US economic resilience could drive the yield to 4.75%. And while they continue to expect 10-year Treasury yields, which reached a multi-year high last month, will end the year around 4%, that forecast, they said, is at risk. Looking at specific names, Apple closed higher on the day but ended the week 6% lower, as worries about China-led demand weakness weighed ahead of the iPhone 15 launch next week. China reportedly expanded its ban of iPhones to local government workers and state-owned companies. Some on Wall Street, however, said that the China-led sell-off in Apple was overblown. Any China government agency iPhone ban is way overblown, Wedbush said in a note. The China government agencies make up less than 500,000 iPhones of roughly 45 million that we expect to be sold in China over the next 12 months, it added. Kroger closed up 3% after the retailer beat estimates for quarterly adjusted profits and said it would pay more than $1 billion to settle opioid claims and announce that it would sell 413 stores and other assets to C&S Wholesale Grocers. In a deal designed to satisfy antitrust concerns, the merger remains on track to close in early next year. Gilead Sciences added 2.8% after Bank of America Securities upgraded the drug maker to buy from neutral, and GameStop finished down 6% after a report that the US Securities and Exchange Committee was investigating the video game retailer chairman, Ryan Cohen. Energy stocks led the market higher, rising 1% as oil prices continued to be buoyed by recent supply cut extensions by Saudi Arabia and Russia. The supply cuts will ultimately see the drawdown in inventories accelerate into the end of the year, ANZ Research said in the note. Phillips 66, Marathon Oil Corporation and Valero Energy Corporation were among the biggest gainers, with the latter at more than 4%. DocuSign reported quarterly results that topped estimates, but the company warned of macro pressures ahead that were likely to dent growth, sending its shares down more than 3%. While we are pleased with our results, like many others, we're seeing continued macro pressures tempering expansion rates, Chief Executive Alan Thigson said in an earnings call. Now turning to the US dollar, it registered an eighth straight week of gains on Friday. The dollar index's weekly winning streak was its longest since 2014, bolstered by recent data suggesting the US economy is still resilient, at least relative to other economies. For the day, the index was nearly flat at 105.06. But in contrast, China's onshore yuan ended its domestic session at its weakest since 2007 amid concerns about China's slowing economy. The dollar has been higher on the back of obviously stronger US data, suggesting that the Fed perhaps has another rate hike before the end of the year, said Quincy Crosby, chief global strategist at LPL Financial. Dollar gains have also prompted a step up in rhetoric from Japanese policymakers, growing uncomfortable with the yen's slide. Japan's top currency diplomat, Masao Kanda, said this week that authorities would not rule out any option to clamp down on speculative moves, while the chief cabinet secretary said the government was watching with urgency. The Japanese yen was last at about 147.82 per dollar and on the weaker side of the key 145 level that prompted Japanese intervention last year. In energy, oil prices rose to a nine-month high as US diesel futures rose and as investors worried about tight oil supplies. Brent futures rose 0.58% to settle at $90.45 a barrel, while US crude prices gained 0.41% to a nine-month high of $87.23 on Friday on rising US diesel futures and worries about tight oil supplies after Saudi Arabia and Russia extended those supply cuts. For the week, both benchmarks were up about 2%, following gains last week of about 5% for Brent and about 7% for WTI. Crude prices continue to trade on supply-side drivers. No one is doubting that OPEC Plus will keep the market tight going into the winter, Ed Moyer said. In Germany, the lower house of parliament passed a bill that could reduce future fossil fuel demand by phasing out oil and natural gas heating systems. And the oil market is still concerned about the demand outlook in China, which has had a sluggish post-pandemic recovery, and stimulus pledges have fallen short of expectations. China has been deluged by the heaviest rain since records began 140 years ago in Hong Kong, killing two people and injuring more than 140. European stocks edged higher on Friday as investors digested better-than-expected French industrial production data at the end of a difficult week. The DAX in Germany traded 0.14% higher, the FTSE in the UK rose 0.49%, and the CAC 40 in France climbed 0.62%. Yet these major cash indices registered losses this week, while the pan-European benchmark Stoxx 600 has fallen for seven straight days. That's the worst string of losses since February 2018. Data released earlier on Friday showed that French industrial output rebounded more than expected in July, climbing 0.8% on a monthly basis instead of the 0.1% expected, after slumping 0.9% the prior month. The equivalent data in Spain fell 1.8% in July, but this is still better than the 2% fall expected and the prior month's 3.2% drop. While these figures have generated some optimism, industrial production in Germany, the region's dominant economy, fell by more than expected in July. Gross domestic product in the Eurozone grew just 0.1% in the second quarter compared to the previous 3 months, and Citigroup has downgraded its 2023 economic growth forecast for the euro area to 0.4% and says it expected the region's economy to shrink gently over the next three quarters. Additionally, German consumer prices rose 0.3% in the month of August. That's a rise of 6.1%, according to data released on Friday. That represented a minor slowing from the 6.2% annual increase the previous month, but it could still pressurize ECB policymakers to hike interest rates once more next week, given inflation in the Eurozone's largest economy remains more than three times higher than the central bank's medium-term 2% target. The European Central Bank has raised rates at each of its past nine meetings, and policymakers are now debating whether to raise the deposit rate again to 4% or maybe pause. Elsewhere, gold futures rose just 0.1% to 1,942, while the euro US dollar traded slightly higher at 1.0700. Most Asian markets fell on Friday as weak economic data from Japan fueled more concerns over slowing growth, while the prospect of higher US interest rates and worsening Sino-US relations dented technology shares. A string of weak economic readings this week have increased concerns about the strength of the recovery of the Chinese economy from its COVID hit, while Friday's revised data showed Japan's economy grew less than initially estimated in the second quarter. Japan's economy grew at an annualized 4.8% in April to June, down from a preliminary estimate of 6% and below market forecasts. Japan's Nikkei 225 and TOPIX indices were the worst performers in Asia, sinking 1.2% and 0.7% respectively after data showed that the Japanese economy grew less than initially estimated in the second quarter. The weak reading indicated that continued stimulus measures from the Bank of Japan may not be supporting growth as much as initially expected, dampening investor sentiment towards local stocks. Expectations of easy monetary conditions in Japan had driven strong outperformance in local shares earlier this week, putting the TOPIX at a 33-year high. But local stocks reversed the bulk of the gains recently on Friday. Regional tech stocks saw extended losses after Beijing banned government employees from using Apple's iPhone. The move sparked sharp losses in Apple's shares, as well as the iPhone maker's regional suppliers. Chipmaker giant TSMC fell nearly 1% in Taiwan trade, while memory chip maker SK Hynix and Samsung Electronics lost 3.6% and 0.7% respectively. Japanese suppliers Tokyo Electron and Japan Display lost 4% and 2.5% respectively, while China's Luxshare Precision Industry shed 3%. Broader Asian technology stocks were also hit by calls from US lawmakers for a complete ban on tech exports to China after two firms, namely Huawei and Semiconductor Manufacturing International Corp, allegedly breached US trade restrictions. The move, coupled with Beijing's recent restrictions on Apple, ramped up concerns over worsening trade ties between the world's largest economies, which could see the start of a renewed trade war. South Korea's KOSPI fell 0.2%, while the Taiwan Weighted Index shed 0.3%, and broader sentiment towards tech came under pressure from renewed concerns over high US interest rates following strong inflation and labor data readings this week. Consumer prices in China returned to positive territory in August, though, while factory gate prices declined more slowly, according to data that was released today. As inflation pressures eased amid signs of stabilization in the economy, but analysts say more policy support is still needed to shore up consumer demand in the world's second biggest economy, with the labour market recovery slowing and household income expectations uncertain. The Consumer Price Index rose 0.1% in August from a year earlier, according to the National Bureau of Statistics. That was slower than the median estimate of 0.2%. CPI fell 0.3% in July, and core inflation, which excludes food and fuel prices, stuck at 0.8% in August. The producer price index fell 3% from a year earlier, in line with expectations after a drop of 4.4% in July, and the drop in factory prices was the smallest in 5 months. There is a bit of improvement in the inflation profile, and in the meantime, the PPI deflation appears to be narrowing, pointing to a slow and moderate restoration process, said Zhao Hao, chief economist at Greater Yuan International. In general, the inflation rate still points to weak demand and requires more policy support for the foreseeable future. Food prices fell 1.7% on the year, while non-food costs rose 0.5%, fed by rising costs linked to tourism. The Bureau said recent floods have damaged corn and rice crops in China's key northern grain-producing belt, sparking domestic food inflation fears as consumers worldwide face tightening food supplies caused by the war in Ukraine. Both CPI and PPI are likely to show modest improvements in the fourth quarter, said Liu Hefang, an economist at Hajiang Securities. Compared with previous months, CPI rose 0.3%, picking up from 0.2% in July. The Statistics Bureau said pork prices rose 11.4% month on month versus no change in July due to the impact of the extreme weather. They were down 17.9% from a year earlier, narrowing from a 26% drop in July. Factory gate deflation moderated in August due to improving demand for some industrial products and rising international crude oil prices, they said. And it's interesting that China's anemic price changes are in sharp contrast to many Western economies where inflation is still burning hot. China in July became the first of the G20 wealthy nations to report a year-on-year decline in consumer prices since Japan's last negative headline CPI reading back in August 2021. August trade data showed that China's exports and imports both narrowed their declines, joining a run of other indicators showing a possible stabilization in the economic downturn as policymakers seek to spur demand and fend off deflation. With early signs of growth stabilization, we see deflationary pressures easing, a trend reflected in higher commodity prices in August, ANZ analysts said. Beijing has, of course, announced a series of measures in recent months to shore up growth, including mortgage rate cuts and the easing of borrowing rules last week by the authorities to aid home buyers. China's central bank could continue to cut interest rates and bank reserve requirements, according to Bruce Pang, chief economist at Jones Lang LaSalle. The premier said this week that China was expected to achieve its 2023 growth target of around 5%, but some analysts believe the target could be missed due to a worsening property slump, weak consumer spending, and tumbling credit growth. China's Shanghai Composite slid 0.18%, extending losses from a string of weak economic readings this week. Trading in Hong Kong was suspended as the city grappled with severe rainfall and flooding in the wake of a typhoon. But Indian stocks were a key outlier this week, with the Nifty 50 well up this week. The index was buoyed by strength in banks and energy stocks, as well as renewed buying into small and mid-cap stocks. And there are recent signs of economic resilience in India following a stellar June quarter GDP report that all kept investors largely positive towards the country, which of course is holding the G20 at the moment. In Australia, the share market dipped again on Friday, extending 4 days of losses for the benchmark index to finish the week 1.7% lower. The ASX 200 closed down 0.2% on Friday to 7,156. The All Ords also fell 0.2%. Another rate pause from the Reserve Bank of Australia did little to spur the market this week, which was instead dragged down by slowing gross domestic product figures and hotter than expected US services sector data. Iron ore miners weighed heavily on the index, with BHP down 1.2% to $43.19. Fortescue Metals shed 2.4% to $19.40, and Rio Tinto dropped 1.7% to $111.17. The miners tracked falls in the iron ore price, with October futures in Singapore pricing the commodity at around $116.43 US a ton, down from a four-month high of around $118 a ton earlier this week. Mineral resources also weighed on the materials sector, dropping 3.8% to $69.08 as it entered ex-dividend trading. The mining sector fell 1.1%, the only industry of the ASX 211 to move more than 1% in either direction on Friday. Liontown Resources shares were the best performing on the benchmark this week, up 16.4%. On Monday, US lithium giant Albemarle upped its non-binding offer for Liontown to a deal that's now valued at $6.6 billion. The shares last traded at $3.05 after gaining another 1% on Friday. Meanwhile, Orora was the ASX 200's worst performer of the week, tumbling 18.2% after the can and bottle maker completed a $1.3 billion equity raise to help fund a proposed buyout of France's Saverglass. The shares last traded at $2.69. AMA Group shares halved on Friday to 6 cents. After the smash repair, it resumed trading after it finished a $55 million equity raising. The shares were priced at 7.5 cents. That's more than a 30% discount on their recent trading levels. And finally, in crypto land, Bitcoin was still directionless despite hopes of progress on ETFs in the US. It was last $25,890. And the total value of crypto is still sitting at around $1 trillion US, one third of its value back in 2021. So if you stand back, lots of uncertainty now, and we're really getting to the crunch point in the year. There is a significant chance that stocks will go lower from this point. As I reminded you in last week's show, September and October tend to be bad months for stocks generally. But this time, with the impression that inflation could be reasserting, higher rates for longer, that's going to put more downward pressure. So buckle up. It'll be interesting the next 2 or 3 weeks. I'll be back next week to tell you what happened. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.